This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. This Saturday, tens of thousands of scientists and their supporters are expected to take to the streets of Washington, D.C. for the March for Science. Partner marches are set up in more than 500 cities around the world, nine of those right here in North Carolina. The demonstrations mark a breaking point for scientists who often view their jobs as apolitical, but threaten budget cuts at the National Institutes of Health and growing antagonism against scientific research have galvanized the scientific community. Joining me in the studio now are two North Carolina scientists who will attend the march in Washington. Jamie Vernon is editor-in-chief of American Scientist magazine. He's also the director of science communications and publications at Sigma Xi, which is a not-for-profit scientific society based at Research Triangle Park. Jamie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Rafael Valdiva. He is a microbiologist and vice dean for basic science at Duke University School of Medicine. Rafael, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about your decision to attend the march in Washington. I'll start with your personal decision to attend the march.
Well, so I think, as you stated, it is a personal decision. Me, like many scientists, have gotten growingly concerned about the place that sciences have had in society, and more recently as to the decline in how science and facts are used in policy and decision-making. I think many of us are at this crossroads, as you stated. Many scientists have been very hesitant to try to jump into the political fray, but I think this is a time that we realize that we have to make apparent to the public in general, and certainly to policymakers, that there's a great value in sciences for society, and that they need to remain a priority in the future.
You also have a prominent position at a prominent medical school at Duke. Was this a discussion at the school and at the university about your participation or anybody else's?
Well, so the way this happened is actually rather organically. It was not an upper-level decision that was made. Essentially, I've been participating in visits to the Hill on behalf of Duke University, but also as part of my professional societies. And so I've gotten to this used to this concept of advocacy. I've been very much pushing our faculty and students and staff to be involved. And so when the March for Science came along, I said, I'm coming. Does anybody else want to come along? And the overwhelming amount of response that we got suddenly made us realize that we didn't want hundreds of cars driving from Duke mm-hmm. over to D.C., so we might as well provide some kind of transportation and low level of organization. But it is really completely organic.
I'm glad that you organized a mass transit because you do believe in global climate change. I'm just guessing you might. Jamie, you have a little different story. Your organization, Sigma Xi, promotes and supports scientific research. Yeah. But what about the debate in the community that you've seen about getting engaged in what is overtly a kind of political demonstration?
Sure. The interpretation of this as a political event was definitely a challenge for our members. We took that into consideration when we were making the decision to become a partner. And Sigma Xi ultimately was the first scientific society to take a partnership role with the march, the National March organizers. And we moved on to subsequently serve as a fiscal sponsor for a lot of the satellite marches, including New York and Chicago and San Francisco, some of the bigger marches. The getting there was a bit of a fight. We had to decide, is this a significant conflict with our mission, or is it consistent with our mission? Does it undermine our 501c3 status, nonprofit status? All of those things were taken into consideration, and we felt that having a million people in the streets celebrating science was something we couldn't miss.
What was the nature of the debate? For those who said we shouldn't get involved, what's the argument?
Well, in many ways, scientists think that when we do step out and speak on policy issues, that we are becoming part of the political debate and part of the political conversation. So they become our members, as well as researchers writ large, become concerned about the backlash against the funding for the research enterprise, as well as general exclusion of knowledge and information. And we're kind of seeing that in some respects with the lack of activity in the Office of Science and Technology Policy at the White House. There hasn't been a science advisor appointed. And so we wonder, has the politicization in recent years contributed to President Trump's lack of interest in engaging the community?
What are the issues at stake here, Raphael, for you? What is it that you want to bring to the attention of the administration and the American public about science and how it's perceived?
So I view it as, for us, as two goals. One is to show the strength in numbers, not only scientists themselves, but those who support the goals that science should have in society. And so it should be open to everybody. You know, for us, we had the same similar kinds of debates about politicization, and we're fine with politics. We're not fine with partisanship. And so when we go over there, it is not to advocate for one camp versus the other, but to ask for both sides of the aisle to work together towards promoting science, which is what they traditionally have done. The other goal that we want to try to achieve is to get the scientific community engaged in the political process, to understand that we have a responsibility not only to communicate our science, but also the value of it, and to become a lot more integrated in society. I mean, I think that is really one of the biggest goals I have specifically for the march.
Well, Jamie, when it comes to people outside of the scientific community who see the value in all of this, you have a pretty important statistic in terms of the number of people who've registered for this march.
Sure. So the partners who've signed on with the March for Science have had regular phone calls, conference calls to discuss the progress of the planning. And one of the recent statistics that shocked me was to find out that 70% of the registrants attending these marches are non-scientists. And so that is should be a strong message to the scientists who are working in the labs and in the industry and across the country that there is a great deal of support for them. I expect millions of people to be out there, and if 70% of them are non-scientists, then we have to be a part of that.
If such a large number of people, and as you say, perhaps 70% of those who show up are non-scientists, what do you think is behind this pushback? And this didn't start with the Donald Trump administration. Right. This began, you know, decades in the making, this sense that we can pick and choose our scientific facts and that which doesn't appeal to our politics, we'll just ignore. Where is this coming from?
Well, I have to say from my personal experience, the first time that I became aware of the role politics played in science was 2001 when George W. Bush signed his executive order limiting the use of stem cells or development of stem cell lines. That woke me up to the power of politics and the conduct of science. And since then, I've been very aware of the groups and the interests who are funding, if not directly engaging in anti-science communications. Particularly around the issue of climate change. There's a lot of economic implications to actually taking a move that will mitigate the impacts of climate change. And so those interests are investing in ways to create questions and doubts about the quality of the science that's being generated, particularly in climate change. And so I think that's been carried over into things like evolution and vaccines. And you can walk through the numbers of issues. And so scientists have been communicating their concerns about this, and I think the public has picked up on that message, and it's time. This is a moment for us to say, before you make any major decisions on scientific research, please take into account the voices of all these people.
I wonder about that, though, Raphael, the message and how you craft a message, because look at what the problem is. You have a scientific, a rational process in the development of science, right? And they're often at odds, and certainly theories are overturned in time, but it's a rational process, and we've accepted it as the way we do business here. If you reject a scientific finding, what does that say about my ability to reach you and suggest to you that perhaps you should reconsider it? Can I use reason as a way of sort of accessing that? In other words, what's the strategy for reversing this trend?
I think at the end of the day, it's going to be about education. And so that everybody, the public in general, becomes where this STEM ends up playing a much greater role in science, technology, and math. It ends up playing a much greater role in the education process, all the way from kids to adults. And also that us as scientists take a much more active role in an everyday-to-day life to communicate what we do and the process itself. I mean, I think it's an important thing that you're saying in terms of the process itself, because I think that is what has been used against science, right? This idea that there's always an internal debate until you reach some kind of conclusion where people who try to argue against a particular scientific finding, they will point to, oh, there is somebody who doesn't agree. And so they've given them equal weight. And I think that it becomes part of the problem.
You know, I think that education is a key component here, but really, what in many ways, this is not about literacy of knowing scientific facts. It's about understanding that the science and the impact it has on things that are of value to you and your community. And some of the arguments that have been posed to counter science are saying that science is undermining those values, particularly on economic issues and in many cases, social issues. So we have to communicate in a way that people understand science is about facts, but it's also about a value to them, delivering a value to them and making their lives better.
Connecting the dots and showing how science has and what would happen if we sort of ignore
exactly
the research in terms of economics. I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Jamie Vernon is editor-in-chief of American Scientist Magazine and the director of science communications and publications at Sigma Xi. It's a not-for-profit that's based in Research Triangle Park. And Rafael Valdivia is a microbiologist and vice dean for basic science at Duke University School of Medicine. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Just ahead, we're going to talk about real science fiction. The literary kind of science fiction where you actually intend to use science to not be factual. We'll talk about the latest novel from John Kessel on the state of things of North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.